Labas and good afternoon. This is Kęstutis Deividas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial, and of course live streaming audio over the internet at ktym.com. Just when it was getting good, a little collaboration there of a bunch of musicians in Lithuania who do a lot of folk rock and stuff, and they call themselves Atalia. They're different members, and they get together and they release these albums. And I just love the stuff. Hope you did too. Anyway, this is Kęstutis Deividas again. Thanks again for tuning in this Saturday afternoon. I'm going to apologize in advance. This show is going to be a little sloppy, and you know, some of the edits may be off, and I may be complaining a bit. I have some pretty serious back problems that are coming up. Now, if you've had back problems and other health issues, you know, I'm not trying to cry too much, but wow, you know, when you are responsible for yourself, in other words, I'm self-employed, I do this radio show as a volunteer effort, I have my own business, I own some property that I manage myself, you know, I have no one to call sick into. My wife's putting up with me. Thank God for that. But, wow, you kind of find out that you're sort of on your own and that there's a lot of things to get done that aren't going to get done if you don't do them. So it's time to start delegating and pulling back from things. So we're just going to kind of go with it today. And let's get through this show and see if we can at least make it interesting to you. More than usual, maybe even. So let's see if we can bring you up to date on what's going on locally. The big event coming up next week, okay, in two weeks, it's the Baltic American Freedom League annual awards banquet. It's Saturday, April 6th. Now, this is an important event. And why? Because, number one, the Baltic American Freedom League does great work. Keeps Lithuania's name in front of congressmen and senators. It keeps Lithuania's name in front of committees. It keeps the Baltics, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, events in these countries and shared democratic values, it keeps everyone reminded in the United States governments that we are in this world together. And we'll be talking about some issues, by the way, with the KGB and spying and all that later. But so much is going on, and there used to be talk that, wow, Lithuania is free now. We don't need to have organizations like the Baltic American Freedom League. You know what? Now more than ever, the way the world is spinning out of control, and I mean that, you know, you look back, look around, and look at what's happening. Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia have been free just barely weeks more than they were free the last time between World War I and World War II, okay? And meanwhile, we share the Lithuania anyway shares the longest common border with the only totalitarian state left in Europe, Belarus. Okay, you know, sure, it's easier to cross the border now. Sure, you can get a visa in Lithuania. You can go visit. Belarusian tourists come to Vilnius, but try speaking out politically about the situation over there, and you'll get locked up. You'll disappear. You will disappear. That's what's going on there. Anyway, that's why organizations like the Baltic American Freedom League need to be supported. And they're having their banquet Saturday, April 6th. Okay? Keynote speaker will be Representative Adam Schiff. And he is the representative of California's 28th Congressional District. Okay? He's recently agreed to co-chair the House Baltic Caucus. He's in his seventh term. And he serves on the House Appropriations Committee and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. As one of the oldest and most powerful committees in Washington, the Appropriations Committee is responsible for setting all funding priorities for the federal government. In other words, this gentleman sits where the money is, okay? And if we need monies, funds to help in the cause for democracy, freedom, transparency in the Baltics, we have a friend there, Representative Adam Schiff, and he will speak on Saturday, April 6th. The flip side of this is that our very own Modest Matkevicius, who has written and directed the well-received documentary film The Other Dream Team, will be the award recipient. So he's one of our own. He's from that generation who was born here, went to school here, but instilled in him was a love of his grandparents' home, okay? His parents' and grandparents' home, the homeland, Lithuania. You know, the same reason many of you listen to this program is the reason you should go and be there Saturday, April 6th. This event, you'll see parts of the movie, too, by the way. You'll be able to buy copies of the film. Say hi to Modest, unless you've been under a rock, okay? The Other Dream Team is about the 1992 Olympics and the Lithuanian basketball team's journey to the Olympics. Why is it significant? If you're a little younger, you might miss it in the sense that, remember, Lithuania only was recognized as free in 1991, in the fall of 1991, okay? A year, barely a year before the Olympics are going to take place, right? And all the Lithuanian hot players are the starters on the Soviet team. All of a sudden, boom, they form a Lithuanian team. They have no money, no funding. They don't know where to begin, but they start pushing themselves to get something done, and the Grateful Dead find out about the quest for freedom, and they give them money, funding, and those tie-dye T-shirts you see them in. And the Grateful Dead, it was a seminal American rock band. Everybody knew who they were, and especially in 1992. So anyway, that's the background. So Marius did a film about it, got it out into the film festivals, and suddenly everyone was enthralled by the story again 20 years later. So once again, the Baltic American Freedom Award will be presented to Modest Matkevicius, writer and director of the film The Other Dream Team. Of course, Modest will speak a little bit and answer some questions, but the main speaker, again, will be keynote speaker Representative Adam Schiff of the 28th Congressional District and co-chairman of the House Baltic Caucus, a friend of our community. It'll be live entertainment also. Tickets are $50. It's at the Latvian Community Center, and we have a new caterer this year, so it's going to be delicious. You're going to have lots of food. You're going to love it. For $50, you'll be entertained. You'll be enthralled. You'll learn something. You'll be supporting our young people who are keeping Lithuania's name out in front of popular culture, okay? And you're just going to have a great time. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks on April 6th. 2013. Now, once again, you can make reservations by calling my office, leaving a message, and speak to my wife or me at 310-453-1735, 310-453-1735. If I'm not here, ask for Audra, or just leave a message that you want to go to the awards banquet, and we'll get back to you, okay? Or call Marita Šepekas at 818-321-1811, 818-321-1811, again at the Latvian Community Center, Saturday evening, April 6th. Come by at 6 o'clock for a cocktail, dinner at 7, program begins at 8 p.m. Moving out a little further, the Daughters of Lithuania will be presenting their annual fundraiser on April 28th. The theme will be the power of music and featuring renowned pianist Rudolfas Bugdinas. Rare opportunity for you, really, to see this wildly entertaining and engaging pianist. I've seen him perform. You know, he's not just a great pianist. He's an entertainer. He engages you. He talks to the audience. He explains what he's doing. He points out things. And by the time you leave, you're educated, and you're enjoying listening to classical music and not necessarily old classical music, but new music, too. And he talks about the themes of music. And anyway, I don't know anything about it. I just know that I had a great time last time that I saw this gentleman, which is a couple of years ago. You should make reservations. Tickets are selling out. Call Vilija Kiršonis at 310-386-1442. 310-386-1442. 386-1442. One more time, reservations, Villa Kirschonis, 310-386-1442. And that, again, is April 28th. April 28th, the Daughters of Lithuania presents The Power of Music with Rudolfas Budginas. That's a Sunday, April 28th at noon at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. There will be refreshments. Now, it's a good thing I apologized to you earlier in the show. You see here on my list of things I need to go backwards, the 24th, which is tomorrow, Sunday. Don't forget the 59th, 59 years running strong, the annual Palm Sunday concert live at St. Casimir's Parish Church. This will be presented to you by the St. Casimir's Parish Choir, with our very own director, Maestro Victor Aceralis, and of course, special guests from the Los Angeles Opera. Always a great show. A guest organist will be Mark Robson, who's performed the last several years. So it's going to be fantastic. It's at 2 in the afternoon. It's in the church. It's sacred music. It's great. It sounds wonderful in there. And when you're done, you go over to the parish hall, St. Casimir's Parish Hall, and you get to meet all the members of the choir and our special guests, our guest stars from the Los Angeles Opera. So that, again, is 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, you know, in about 24 hours from now. Okay, 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, St. Casimir's Parish Church. It's $25, students $15. $25, students $15. A great way to spend a Sunday afternoon. And again, the 59th annual, imagine that, 59 years, every Palm Sunday, they've put on a concert and they're doing it again. See you tomorrow. And if you haven't found enough to do on every weekend that's coming up, also there's the Birutietes Pavasaru Balus, which is the Birutietes Women's Group, and it'll be their spring banquet, and that's on the 14th. Okay, Sunday the 14th at noon, April 14th at noon, and there'll be live entertainment, you're going to have a great lunch, and you're going to find out about what great work this women's group, Birutieche, do. For tickets and information, call Orna at 323-650-2263, 323-650-2263, April 14th, noon, St. Casimir's Parish Hall. And before we go to break, we want to acknowledge and wish a very special happy birthday and Ilgausu Matu to a couple of long-time listeners. And when I say long time, I mean long time. 100 years. Celebrating her 100th birthday is Stace Gricius. She turned 100 today, March 23rd. Best wishes go out to her from all of us, but especially from her daughter, Danuta Babušis, and son-in-law, Dr. Sigitas Babušis, son, Rimvydas Gricius, and daughter-in-law, Dalia Gricius. Not to mention her 5 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. May you be healthy and happy. Valo, valo, valo! Ilgausu Matu from us here at Independent Lithuanian Radio and your family and friends. Stace Gricius, 100 Šimta Matu today. Next and finally, we want to send our birthday wishes to another loyal and avid listener and a special friend who happens to be a neighbor of ours out in the San Fernando Valley. That's Vanda Zelanis. Vanda Zelanis will be celebrating her 90th birthday on Monday. Yes, Vanda, I gave away the secret. You're going to be 90 years old on Monday, and you should be proud. Happy birthday, Ilgausu Matu, Vanda Zelanis, and Stace Gricius. Aš ant balto smėlio parašiau tau laišką, ilgą meilės laišką, iš viso širdies. Kas skaitys į vėjas, jūs po kopas vaikštų, kas skaitys į vėjas, niekas negirdės. Yes, well, a little snippet from an old Lithuanian love song to our birthday girls. Well, we never want to forget the weather in Lithuania, you know, considering it's winter, and this is about as flat as it gets, right? The highs will be between 32 and 35 degrees for the coming 10 days, and the lows, after being down to 10 and 12 degrees tonight and tomorrow night, will climb up into the high 20s and push 30 degrees by Sunday, March 31st. In other words, the days are going to be pretty much the same, and the nights in the immediate future are going to be very cold, but they'll be warming up over the coming 10 days. Do you all remember Alexander Litvinenko? Sure you do. In 2006, he was murdered. He was an agent of the British M16 and Spanish Secret Services, and formerly an officer of the Soviet KGB and Russian FSB secret services. In November 1998, Litvinenko and several other FSB officers publicly accused their superiors of ordering the assassination of Russian tycoon and oligarch Boris Berezovsky. Litvinenko was arrested the following March of charges of exceeding the authority of his position. He was acquitted in November 1999, but rearrested before the charges were again dismissed in 2000. He fled with his family to London and was granted asylum in the UK, where he became an agent for British intelligence services and also became a writer and a journalist. He wrote two books, Blowing Up Russia, Terror from Within, and Lubyanka Criminal Group, wherein he accused Russian secret services of staging the Russian apartment bombings and other terrorist acts in an effort to bring Putin into power. He also accused Putin of ordering the October 2006 murder of Russian journalist Anna Politkovskaya. And you remember her. She was brutally murdered, shot in her apartment. I believe in the hallway, if I remember correctly. Anyway, he suddenly got ill back in November of 2006, 7 years ago, and was hospitalized. And what was it was ultimately established that it was poisoning by radioactive plutonium. He died on November 21st. The events leading up to this are a matter of controversy, spawning numerous theories relating to poisoning and death. It's a very rare way to die. You saw pictures of him. His hair had fallen out. Big patches started coming out in his face. Later, they tried to do this to the Ukrainian prime minister, remember? I'm telling you this because his widow has pursued, Marina, has pursued a vigorous campaign on behalf of her husband through the Litvinenko Justice Foundation. And in October of 2011, she won the right for a full public inquest into his death. Basically, the KGB and the Russian government has roadblocked any kind of investigation all along this thing. So now, just a couple of weeks ago, you know, this sort of fell behind. As I told you, I was traveling. I've injured my back. I'm just catching up on this news. Back on March 14th, okay, this was in The Guardian. A coroner says he is delaying the inquest until October to allow more evidence to be gathered. The inquest is to be held on October 2nd now, it has been announced, amid claims that government incompetence and politically motivated Russian maneuvering have dragged out proceedings. The coroner, Sir Robert Owen, had originally suggested that the inquest into the death of the Russian spy could start in May. But at a hearing on Thursday, this is back earlier this month, he said, quote, with great reluctance, he had to delay the date to allow more time for evidence. Litvinenko was a former officer of Russia's FSB. Anyway, I've told you all that, okay? On Thursday, Owen said he had great sympathy with Litvinenko's widow, Marina, who had already waited 6 years to discover the truth surrounding her husband's murky death. I recognize she has a right to prompt resolution in this matter and a compelling human need to understand the death of her husband. But, he added, the thoroughness of the investigation must not be compromised. Speaking outside the Royal Court of Justice, Mrs. Litvinenko, the widow, said she continued to put her faith in British justice. It's not easy, but I understand, she said. I have faith. I have an extraordinary team. I appreciate the job they do for me. This latest delay can be partly explained by the case's complexity. The full inquest is likely to last up to 3 months. It will examine forensic evidence, witness statements, and CCTV footage gathered by Scotland Yard. Experts from the UK's nuclear agency, the Atomic Weapons Establishment, will testify also. Earlier this year, Russia's investigative committee joined other official parties in the inquest, who include Mrs. Litvinenko and her son Anatoly, the Home Office, the Metropolitan Police, M16, and the oligarch that was ordered murdered, Boris Berezovsky. Okay. Anyway, I'm bringing this up because this brings again into focus the power that the KGB and the Russian spy services have up till this very day. These events have also sparked a editorial that you may or may not have seen in the New York Times, written on March 4th. Okay, on what we would call Kazuko Muge, the first on St. Casimir's Day, 60 years after Joseph Stalin's death on March 5th, 1953, Russia is still struggling whether to view him as a mass murderer or a national hero. Can you believe that I'm reading this to you, ladies and gentlemen? Russia is struggling whether to view him as a mass murderer or a national hero. This isn't so hard. Although his name and statues have been almost absent from Russia since de-Stalinization campaign following his death, he continues to impose himself onto Russia's political discourse far more prominently than Lenin. Although Russians know more about Stalin's crime than they ever did before, many politicians and historians want to pull him out of the shadows and celebrate him for his role in the industrialization of a young Soviet state and the victory over Nazi Germany. I don't need to tell you what industrialization meant from Lithuania. It meant destruction of the family farm and moving all the people into the ugliest apartment buildings that you can imagine. But I digress. Communists have collected 100,000 signatures on a petition to give Volgograd back to the name Stalingrad. Others are seeking a referendum to this end. If there is a metro station in Paris called Stalingrad, they argue, why should the name be banned in Russia? Earlier this year, on the 70th anniversary of the Battle of Stalingrad, buses in several Russian cities were decorated with portraits of Stalin. It would seem to be difficult to still have lingering doubts about the role of Stalin, who ranks along with Hitler and Mao among the worst mass murderers of the 20th century. Yet Russians haven't ever been able to agree how they should view him. For the 60th anniversary of his death, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace conducted a Stalin poll. It found that Stalin is the uncontested number one on Russia's list of great historical figures, ahead of Lenin, Marx, and Peter the Great. Only 12% of Russians felt that way in 1989. Today, fully 50% do. In 1994, 27% of Russians had a positive view of Stalin. In 2011, it was 45%. 50% of the respondents thought that Stalin was a wise leader who brought might and prosperity to the Soviet Union. Yet at the same time, 68% agreed that he was a cruel tyrant guilty of the death of millions of innocent civilians. 60% also said it was more important under his leadership that the Soviet people won World War II. Already in the 19th century, a Russian poet said that it's impossible to fathom Russia with your brains. From his tomb behind Lenin's mausoleum, from which he was evicted in 1961, Stalin must be taking pride in the fact that he can still divide the people he ruled and terrorized 60 years ago. Stalin's supporters, reviving an old agitprop line, can still claim that, quote, Stalin lives, and today's tyrants can still hope that they can get away with mass murder. Now, I need to tell you here that this article editorial was written by Samuel Rocklin, a Danish journalist now based in Washington, who was born in Siberia, where his family lived in exile for 16 years. He came to Denmark at the age of 10. So he continues to write, in my family, there has never been any question about how we view Stalin. In 1941, my parents and two siblings were among thousands of Lithuanian citizens deported to the remotest regions of Siberia. After 2 years, more than 40% of the deportees had perished. Still, the exile offered my parents a better chance of survival than the alternative. Shortly after they were deported, the Nazis crossed into Lithuania, and all Jewish families in town perish. So paradoxically, my family could say, thank you, Comrade Stalin, for deporting us. But it was not exactly gratitude that characterized our view of Stalin. My parents never had any doubt that he was a state criminal on a global scale, so they did not succumb to the panic that gripped the Soviet Union when Stalin died. I remember vividly how women from the neighborhood ran around in the courtyard crying hysterically when news of Stalin's death reached our Siberian village. In our tiny apartment, there was no mourning or crying. Stalin's death lit a flicker of hope that we now may be able to go back to Denmark, my mother's homeland. It happened 4 years later. Thank you, Comrade Khrushchev. The fact is that the de-Stalinization campaign was never completed, neither by Khrushchev nor his successors. Under Brezhnev's long rule, Stalin was relegated to a no-man's land of history that allowed this half-hidden cult to persist in a mixture of defiance and protest against the weakness of Kremlin rulers. An underground industry of Stalin memorabilia developed that distributed Stalin pictures and calendars. Truck drivers took to taping a portrait of Stalin on the windshield as a symbol of bygone power and greatness. Under Gorbachev, the last Soviet leader, and Boris Yeltsin, the first president of Russia, any attempt to deal with Stalin were drowned in political chaos. When Vladimir Putin took over, he approached the question of Stalin's legacy with his customary ambivalence and evasiveness. Putin openly deplored the lives lost during the rule of terror, but he never condemned Stalin. A product of the KGB, Putin's power base rests on the same structure that empowered and served Stalin's terror machine. All talk of a national monument for the victims of Stalin's terrors has disappeared from the public debate since Putin took power. And so instead of the catharsis that Russia needs and deserves, Russians will go on struggling with a dictator who refuses to go away for good. As the Russians like to say, our past has become again as unpredictable as our future. Now in Lithuania, the Genocide and Resistance Research Center continues to print the name of former KGB agents. And every time they do this, their website crashes and freezes up because of a heavy traffic of visitors. 50 years from now, the story of the KGB will no longer interest the wider world, but it still affects lives and relationships of many Lithuanians, not to mention former Soviet security agents who have gone into politics or have risen high in civil service. The publication of the recent list of the regional offices of the KGB has unleashed a flood of passion. The name of the director of the Criminal Police Bureau, Algirdas Matonis, was on the list, as were the names of many people currently occupying important positions in Lithuania. Until now, their past has been wholly hidden from Lithuanian society. More than 100,000 people worked for the KGB in Lithuania after the war. In 1990, 6,000 Lithuanians were KGB agents. A large majority of them escaped the lustration or the purification and consider their past to be a secret. About 1,500 former employees have chosen to admit their collaboration, and so have their relationship with the Soviet security agency filed as state secrets under terms of a special law enacted in 1999. Among those who admitted it, many worked for the KGB well before 1990. So, ladies and gentlemen, it goes on. Again, these people are still around, and they're in positions of power in Lithuania. Is it any wonder that so many of your friends and relatives and loved ones, especially those that are old enough to remember, are frustrated and angry at their government and at their institutions? This is Kęstutis Reividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. I hope you enjoyed the program today and you tune in again next week. Iki pasimatymo.